This is Side 3A of Macular Degeneration, The Complete Guide to Saving and Maximizing Your Sight by Lilas G. Mock, M.D. and Marja Mock, Ph.D. Continuing on page 86, completion of Chapter 2, Medical Treatments, Research, and New Discoveries. Your reader for this side is Carolyn Rhodes. High-tech and low-tech, what we can do at home. No matter how successful high-tech solutions become, our best option will always be prevention. There is much we can do at home to reduce our risk of AMD or to minimize its effects once we develop it. We already know that smoking contributes to AMD. Some researchers and health practitioners also suspect that macular degeneration may be related to the increase in other pollutants, particularly from pesticides and herbicides that we're all exposed to daily in our food and air. While we have no proof yet that pollution plays a role, except for cigarette smoke, there is conclusive proof that our diets do. Until this year, we all knew it was good to eat carrots and dark green leafy vegetables that are rich in lutein, such as kale and spinach. Now a new landmark nationwide study has shown that vitamin supplements are effective enough in combating macular degeneration to be considered a new treatment, along with PDT and laser. A second groundbreaking study by Joanna Seddon, M.D., and her colleagues at Harvard University has shown that our risk of macular degeneration is significantly higher if we're eating too much of the wrong kinds of oils in our diets and not enough of the right kinds. The wrong oils turn out to be key ingredients in many common packaged grocery products that are familiar staples in our kitchens. Canned soups, frozen dinners, chips, breads, microwave popcorn, and even ice cream. How can this be? And how are we supposed to eat without them? We'll answer both these questions and more in the next chapter. In the meantime, though, it's sobering to think that while tens of millions of dollars are spent on finding a cure for AMD, we might just be able to avoid it altogether if we had something different for dinner and took our vitamins. Chapter 3. Genes, Greens, and Oils. The Causes, Prevention, and Natural Treatment of AMD. It sounds funny to recommend spinach, given the sophistication of modern medicine, but there's ample, basic scientific evidence that shows it is important to the eyes. Physicians might do patients a service by prescribing cookbooks. Stuart Richter, OD, PhD. Mother Nature is no less difficult or more complicated than any other mother. John Brittner, M.D., M.P.H., John Hopkins School of Hygiene and Public Health. In this chapter, we've put all the known risk reducers together to come up with a 5-star prevention program that you can use to help keep your maculas healthy. You'll also find the facts on natural remedies, like wolfberry, and natural practices, like yoga. Perhaps the best news of recent research is this. It's not too late. Even if you already have macular degeneration, you may be able to slow its progress by the choices you make in the grocery store and in daily life. The importance of these choices makes much more sense if we understand the risk factors for AMD and its causes, so we'll begin there. Are you at risk? Macular degeneration's full name is age-related macular degeneration for good reason, parentheses. There are actually other rarer types of macular degeneration that are not age-related, in parentheses. The number one risk factor is age. Beyond 50, the older you get, the more likely you are to develop AMD. Age is followed by smoking, a family history of AMD, blue or light-colored eyes, a diet low in dark green leafy vegetables, and a diet too high in omega-6 fatty acids and too low in omega-3 fatty acids. If you have any of these factors, your risk of developing macular degeneration is greater than if you don't. How much greater? We aren't sure, but greater nonetheless. Besides age, though, these risk factors are not absolutes. You can find smokers with blue eyes, terrible diets, and a family history of AMD who don't have it themselves. You can also find non-smokers with dark brown eyes, healthy diets, and no family history of AMD who have developed it. But these cases are like the proverbial exceptions that prove the rule. Most people with AMD have one or more risk factors. Why these six risk factors? Why not others? What do these factors have in common? In order to answer these questions, we need to know something about what causes macular degeneration and how free radicals play a role. In the box at the bottom of the page is the list of the leading risk factors for AMD. 1. Age, parentheses, the older, the higher the risk after the age of 50, in parentheses. 2. Smoking. 3. Family history of AMD. 4. Blue or light-colored eyes. 5. Diet low in dark green leafy vegetables. 6. Diet too high in omega-6 fatty acids and too low in omega-3 fatty acids. What causes AMD? As Chapter 1 explains, macular degeneration is basically a breakdown of the support tissue that maintains the macula. It begins with the accumulation of waste and lipid deposits that clog this support tissue, making it impossible to keep the macula's rods and cone cells clean and supplied with adequate oxygen. Without adequate oxygen, the rods and cones eventually asphyxiate. In wet macular degeneration, abnormal, unstable blood vessels grow through the support tissue, probably in response to this lack of oxygen. Ironically, these vessels are prone to leaks, which flood the rods and cones with blood, asphyxiating them even more quickly. But why does this whole cycle of oxygen deprivation from accumulated waste and lipids begin in the first place? There are two prominent theories that answer this question. 1. Poorly functioning blood vessels. In this scenario, the blood vessels supplying the macula's support tissue do not pick up waste efficiently enough or deliver oxygen consistently enough. As a result, the macula becomes clogged with waste and lacks adequate oxygen. The lack of oxygen kills the support tissue cells and then the rod and cone cells of the macula itself. In the case of wet AMD, new abnormal vessels grow in a kind of misguided effort to supply more oxygen. As we know, these new vessels are weak and prone to leaking, so all they actually wind up doing is wreaking havoc. The question becomes, why do the original blood vessels become overwhelmed and fail to do their job? The answer may be that the job is too stressful because the waste is too hard to pick up. 2. Abnormal waste tips. In this scenario, the real culprit is damaged or abnormal waste. Rod and cone cells have disposable lipid, parentheses, fatty, end parentheses, tips. When they process light and metabolize oxygen, the tips fall off as waste and new tips grow. Normally, these tips are collected from the macula by the RPE, a layer of tissue supporting the macula, and transported on conveyor belt to waiting blood vessels. These vessels flush the waste tips into the bloodstream. But abnormal waste tips lack the handles the RPE uses to identify them and drag them away, so they sit around, taking up space and making it difficult for the RPE to supply fresh oxygen deliveries. The lack of oxygen kills first RPE cells and then the rods and cones. Of course, it may also trigger the growth of abnormal, leaky blood vessels. The question in this scenario becomes, what is causing the waste tips to be abnormal? So which scenario is it? We don't know yet. It may even be a combination of both. But either way, free radicals play a role. Understanding that role explains why age, smoking, blue or light-colored eyes, a family history, and our diets are all risk factors. And it tells us what we can do to reduce our risk. Free radicals. Free radicals are oxygen molecules with an electron missing, which makes them unstable. Left to their own devices, free radicals cause trouble by reacting with other molecules in our bodies, preventing them from doing their jobs or actually destabilizing their structures. You may have heard of free radicals before, since they are now believed to play an important role in the development of certain cancers. Free radicals are a normal part of our system. We produce them as byproducts of oxygen metabolism. We metabolize a lot of oxygen in our maculas, so we produce a lot of free radicals there. Mother Nature has provided our bodies with a natural mechanism for handling free radicals. They are usually picked up and carried off by antioxidants, molecules we get from our food that are designed to pair up electrically with free radicals and neutralize them. So we are actually designed to handle a certain amount of naturally occurring free radicals. If this is true, though, how are free radicals contributing to cancer and AMD? The problem is that pesticides, car exhaust, cigarette smoke, chemical food additives, household cleaners, and excessive unprotected sun exposure, which we wind up eating, breathing, and soaking up in record amounts, also produce free radicals. These free radicals are toxic to our eyes and to the rest of our bodies. They overwhelm our limited supply of antioxidants, especially if we aren't replenishing antioxidants by eating foods that contain them. When this happens, the free radicals are literally free to react with the cones in our macula, producing abnormal waste tips. These waste tips are called abnormal because they are thought not to have the characteristics of natural waste tips produced in the eye. They don't look like waste, and they don't act like waste, so they can't be grabbed by cleaner cells from the RPE, the tissue that underlies the macula, and carried away. Instead, they accumulate in permanent deposits that gum up the macula. Eventually, they back up the entire system that keeps the macula alive until it can't process any more waste or deliver any more oxygen. It's essentially the equivalent of putting steel ball bearings in a garbage disposal. Nothing happens to the ball bearings, but the disposal breaks. Almost every single one of the risk factors we have for macular degeneration can be linked to free radicals. The older we are, the more exposure we've had to environmental toxins, so aging makes sense as a risk factor. The lighter our eyes, the less protective melanin or pigment they have to protect us from free radicals produced by the sun, so blue or light-colored eyes make us more vulnerable than brown ones. Dark green leafy vegetables are rich in the antioxidants that our eyes use to counteract free radicals, so a diet low in these vegetables would leave us more vulnerable. Smoking can be described as the activity of overloading our eyes with free radicals, since the chemicals in cigarettes are full of them. And an imbalance of oils in our body can lead to functional weaknesses and lackluster tissue that is generally ill-prepared to handle the free radical onslaught of modern living. Is pollution really a major problem? Yes, I believe it is, but we haven't proved it yet. We are just beginning to understand how pollution affects our health. Cancer, some birth defects, asthma, allergies, and other autoimmune conditions have been linked to industrial chemicals of one kind or another. There is still much research to do on the many unanswered questions, but it looks more and more as if macular degeneration may join this list, making environmental regulations critically important. For our overall health, we should demand that legislators protect our air and water and ensure that we have access to accurate information about chemicals used to produce and process our food. Macular degeneration is now appearing in industrialized countries without a known history of the condition, such as Japan and Argentina, which suggests that pollution may play an even larger role than we assume. There is also some evidence that people who live in rural areas with organically grown foods have less risk of AMD. One 1997 study conducted in the isolated mountain village of Salandra, Italy, where residents grew their own food, found that even though 30% of the population had blue eyes, their rate of macular degeneration was less than half the U.S. rate. What about genetics? If the environment is so important, why is family history a major risk factor? Isn't genetics the real answer? After all, AMD definitely runs in families. Joanna Seddon, MD of Harvard, has found that people who have a close relative with macular degeneration are 3 times more likely to develop it than those who don't. Researchers at the Cole Eye Institute in Cleveland found that if one identical twin has macular degeneration, it is 100% certain that the other will develop it too. In fraternal twins, who are genetically like brothers and sisters, the rate is 50%. So if you have a sibling with AMD, you probably have at least a 50% chance of developing it yourself. But that doesn't mean that macular degeneration is really a genetic disease in the sense that it's caused by a single bad gene or even a collection of bad genes. True genetic diseases are relatively rare, but millions of people have AMD, even people with no family history of the condition. So how do we explain the fact that AMD clearly seems to be inheritable? The answer is that what we're calling age-related macular degeneration is probably a collection of different kinds of AMD with varying characteristics. We just haven't figured out how to distinguish between them. This may explain why people have such different experiences of AMD, different periods of onset, different degrees of vision loss, and different patterns of AMD, either dry, occult pattern wet, classic pattern wet, or a combination. Some kinds of AMD may be more genetically determined than others. We already know this is true with other forms of macular degeneration in general. For example, we know that Stargardt's disease, which is the juvenile form of age-related macular degeneration, is caused by a mutation of the ABCR (ATP-binding cassette retina) gene. The ABCR gene is a transporter gene. It helps to trigger the removal of waste material, so a defect in it would result in waste material building up in the retina and the RPE, eventually damaging the conveyor belt system that supports the macula. Stargardt's usually develops between the ages of 8 and 30 and causes patterns of vision loss to those of very similar, although often less extreme, age-related macular degeneration. In 2001, Richard Allen Lewis, MD of Baylor University, who studies families with both Stargardt's and AMD, found an association between AMD and the same mutation in the ABCR gene that causes Stargardt's disease. This is good news, since transporter genes often respond to drug treatments that make up for the gene's poor performance and to gene therapy that replaces the defective gene with a healthy one. But unlike Stargardt's, AMD is not a monogenic or one-gene disease. It clearly has multiple causes that interact with one another in complex ways. Even those researchers who focus on finding a gene for AMD, such as Paulus de Jong, MD of the Netherlands, suspect that only about 1/5 to 1/4 of AMD cases result directly from genetics. It seems to take a genetic predisposition plus environmental factors for most of us to actually develop macular degeneration. However, genetics research is progressing at lightning speed, at least as far as research studies go, At the 2001 American Academy of Ophthalmology meeting, Edward M. Stone, MD of the University of Iowa, cited 6 major eye diseases whose genetic causes have been discovered in the last 10 years. Age-related macular degeneration may be among the next. Your 5-star prevention program. You can do 5 things to reduce your risk of developing macular degeneration or slow its progress if you already have it. First, don't smoke and avoid secondhand smoke in bars, restaurants, and your workplace. Second, wear sunglasses with blue blockers, which block blue light rays. Third, eat a healthy diet with at least 5 servings per week of dark green leafy vegetables, such as spinach or kale. Fourth, eat the right amounts of the right oils. And fifth, take a balanced dose of vitamins and minerals. That's the whole ballgame in a nutshell. Where are you going to find blue blockers? How are you going to add dark greens to your diet without turning into Popeye? What are the right kinds of oils? What vitamins should you take and in what doses? We'll answer all these questions and more as we walk through the program in greater detail. A word of caution, though, before you continue reading. Always check with your doctor before changing your diet or exercise habits. You may have health conditions or medications that will require modifying this program, especially if you smoke, have high blood pressure, heart disease, or diabetes, or are taking Coumadin. Eating excessive amounts of spinach may affect your thyroid, so vary your vegetable intake and remember to eat a balanced diet. Again, a listing of your 5-star prevention program. 1. Do not smoke. Avoid secondhand smoke. 2. Wear sunglasses with blue blockers. 3. Eat plenty of dark green leafy vegetables. 4. The right oils and eat them in the right amounts. 5. Take a balanced dose of vitamins and minerals. The first star, do not smoke. No one should smoke. If you don't smoke, don't start. If you do smoke, stop now. I know that quitting is incredibly difficult and smoking is a great pleasure, but smoking is terrible for your health and for the health of anyone who breathes your smoke. Smoking contributes to cancer, heart disease, emphysema, asthma, and macular degeneration. Smoking adversely affects blood circulation and blood vessel health, making wet macular degeneration more likely. And smoking overloads your eyes with free radicals using up the lutein, zeaxanthin, and vitamin C and E your eyes need to take care of the naturally occurring free radicals produced by oxygen consumption in the macula. Smoking also inhibits vitamins from being processed. I can't say enough bad things about smoking or breathing secondhand smoke, and I can't think of anything good about it, especially not for your eyes. If you must smoke, it is doubly important that you follow the remaining recommendations for reducing your risk of macular degeneration, especially the diet and vitamin recommendations. The second star, wear sunglasses with blue blockers. You are probably already aware of the importance of wearing sunglasses with ultraviolet, UV, light protection. This is important since UV rays can contribute to cataracts, but extensive laboratory studies of primates provide persuasive evidence that blue light may be more damaging to the macula than UV light. Blue light waves are visible to us. They are what give the sky and any other object its blue color. Blue light waves are also very short and scatter easily, so a great deal of the glare we experience from sunlight also comes from blue light. Blue blockers are simply a lens tint, usually an amber color, that blocks blue light rays. Unlike other tints, blue blockers don't make the world look darker because they still let in a considerable amount of light while blocking glare. For this reason, blue blockers were very popular a few years ago as sports sunglasses. Many people with macular degeneration find them particularly helpful regardless of their health benefits, because they reduce glare indoors and outdoors while keeping the world bright and visible. What do we know about blue light? Blue light has been shown to cause a photochemical reaction that produces free radicals in the eyes of primates. Researchers believe that these free radicals may interact in human eyes with the high oxygen and lipid content of the rod and cone tips to produce abnormal chunks of metabolized waste. Melanin, the substance that gives eyes their color, protects the macula by capturing the free radicals produced by light and escorting them out before they cause damage to the macula. People with blue or light-colored eyes or fair skin have much less melanin than people with dark eyes. Light-colored eyes transmit up to 100 times as much light to the back of the eye as dark eyes do, and they have less melanin to absorb the light's radiant energy. If you have light eyes, you just weren't designed to take in a lot of sun. Although the laboratory studies on animals seem nearly unanimous, the real-world studies on people have produced conflicting results. Some studies positively link macular degeneration with any kind of light exposure, while other studies have found a weak correlation. Yet another group of studies has found no correlation at all between macular degeneration and sunlight. One Australian study concluded that the problem may not be how much time you spend in the sun, but how sensitive you are to sunlight. It suggested that people who have plenty of melanin and don't tend to burn easily are at less risk for macular degeneration than people who burn easily or are bothered by sun glare. But this study hasn't been replicated. We don't know for sure whether blue light contributes to AMD, but it appears likely. To protect yourself, especially if you have little melanin, wear blue blockers outside. Finding blue blockers. The color that blocks blue is yellow, so blue blockers must contain a yellow tint. You can purchase ready-made NOIR, N-O-I-R, sunglasses that block blue and UV light with a variety of tints, including light yellow, dark yellow, orange, amber, and plum. People with macular degeneration usually prefer dark yellow, amber, or plum. NOIR glasses are available as clip-ons or in regular frame styles. Both NOIR and Eschenbach also offer large plastic frames that fit over your regular glasses. Parentheses. See the catalogs listed in Appendix C. In parentheses. You can also ask your local optical shop to make you a pair of blue blockers or have your current glasses tinted to block blue light. The third star. Eat plenty of dark green leafy vegetables. You may have heard that some fruits and vegetables, such as blueberries, broccoli, and tomatoes, are particularly rich in antioxidants. Many cancer prevention diets recommend broccoli especially. You are unlikely, though, to be eating vegetables that are rich in lutein, an antioxidant important for your macula. These vegetables are less popular and less familiar, particularly outside the South. They are the dark green leafy ones: kale, collard greens, mustard greens, Swiss chard, and spinach. Red peppers and romaine lettuce contain smaller amounts of lutein. Joanna Seddon, MD, and her colleagues at Harvard University first reported the benefits of these vegetables to our eyes in 1994. They found that people who ate at least 5 servings per week of dark green leafies had a 43% lower risk of macular degeneration than those who ate small amounts or none at all. While this study did not prove that eating vegetables will prevent AMD, its findings were striking enough to get everyone's attention. I wouldn't be surprised if subsequent studies substantiate Seddon's work in the next decade. I recommend eating exactly what the folks in Seddon's study ate. To do this, you need to have at least 5 servings of dark green leafy vegetables per week, totaling 15,000 micrograms of lutein per serving. A serving is approximately 3.5 ounces or 3 cups of greens uncooked. Since tallying thousands of micrograms and estimating ounces is an impossible task, we've tried it. We've found an easier way. On the following chart, 15,000 micrograms is roughly equal to 5 points. So if you eat any combination of dark green leafies that add up to 25 points per week, you get the right amount of nutritional protection and most likely decrease your risk of AMD. You're probably thinking, are you kidding? I'll turn green. You might suspect that eating kale isn't going to be a pain-free process. You're not alone. Most Americans aren't used to eating enough vegetables. Our diets have been shaped in part by the now-debunked FDA food pyramid, which emphasizes breads and meats at the expense of vegetables. If you're not a Southerner, you may not be used to preparing or eating kale, collard greens, or mustard greens. Not to worry, we've got some fantastic greens ideas in Chapter 4. You'll also find our collection of 10 favorite greens recipes from friends, family, and the folks at our Visual Rehabilitation Center, as well as 10 new simple gourmet greens recipes by Omri Oranau, chef at Rick and Ann's in Berkeley, California. We know that even with the best recipes, there may be times when you aren't able to eat enough dark green leafy vegetables to get all your lutein for the week. Your local grocery store may not have good quality produce in stock, or you may be too busy to plan and cook, or perhaps your job or lifestyle requires you to eat out a great deal, and your only options are what a restaurant menu offers. If this is the case, try eating at least half of your lutein from fresh or frozen vegetables and getting the rest through supplements. There are a number of multivitamins and minerals on the market today that include lutein. Below is a list of lutein-rich vegetables and the amount of lutein points for each one. Choose any combination of lutein-rich vegetables that adds up to 25 points per week. 3 uncooked cups of gives you this many lutein points. Kale or collard greens, 7. Spinach, Swiss chard, or cress, 4. Parsley, not dried, or mustard greens, 3. Red peppers, romaine lettuce, beet greens, or okra, 2. Broccoli, 2 cups, peas, 1/2 cup, or leaf lettuce, 1. If you eat fewer than 25 points per week, take lutein supplements or a multivitamin with lutein to make up the difference. The fourth star, choose the right oils and eat them in the right amounts. Late in 2001, Dr. Seddon and her colleagues at Harvard University reported another startling finding about nutrition and AMD. They found that people whose diets had the right ratio of omega-3 and omega-6 fatty acids have less macular degeneration than those whose diets are skewed. The real bombshell, though, is that most of us are eating skewed diets, very skewed diets. We get 5 times more omega-6 than we should, and hardly any omega-3 at all. Since omega-6 and omega-3 compete with each other in our bodies, what little omega-3 we get hasn't got a prayer of protecting our retinas, which is one of its jobs. It turns out that the rods and cones of our macula need a certain amount of omega-3 to function properly. This may be a major reason that so many of us are winding up with accumulated waste in our maculas and AMD. What are fatty acids anyway? Fatty acids are fat molecules found in saturated fats, such as butter, and in unsaturated fats, such as safflower and olive oil. We all know by now that if we eat large quantities of saturated fats, we'll clog up our arteries and will wind up as candidates for a heart attack. As a result, many people have turned to vegetable oils for a healthier diet. But large quantities of common vegetable oils, like corn, safflower, and soybean oil, may increase our risk of macular degeneration because they are chock full of omega-6 fatty acids. You don't have to eat fried food or use lots of vegetable oil in your cooking to be getting too much omega-6, because these oils are key ingredients in just about every commercial food product on the market, especially low-fat foods such as crackers, sports bars, and microwave popcorn. I recently checked every label in a food mart and found that the only products in the whole store that didn't contain omega-6 rich vegetable oils were the ketchup, mustard, and relish. Everything else that came in a box, bag, can, or package contained omega-6 oils, including the Ben & Jerry's ice cream. To reduce your omega-6 consumption, therefore, you need to avoid packaged foods with vegetable oil listed in the ingredients. Our heroes: olive, canola, fish, and flaxseed oils. The right ratio of omega-6 to omega-3 fatty acids is 3:1, which means we need to consume approximately 3 times as much omega-6 as omega-3. We already know that vegetable oils such as sunflower, safflower, and soybean are rich in omega-6, but they aren't very healthy choices, especially for cooking, because these oils are polyunsaturated, which means they don't actually tolerate heat well. Cooking with them degrades their chemical structure, making them possible candidates for producing abnormal waste when they are metabolized in our bodies. So what oils should we use? The answer is monounsaturated oils such as olive and canola oil for their omega-6 fatty acids, and fish oil and flaxseed oil for their omega-3 fatty acids. Omega-6 for cooking and baking, olive, canola, and oleic-rich oils. For cooking, use good quality olive or canola oil. These oils contain high levels of oleic acid, a monounsaturated oil that tolerates heat and light much better than polyunsaturated vegetable oils do, so cooking won't significantly degrade its nutritional content. If you have a recipe that calls for another oil, check with your health food store. Some of the companies that produce high-quality olive and canola oils also have lines of oleic-rich safflower, sesame, almond, corn, and peanut oils that you can use, especially for baking. Omega-3 from the sea, fish oils. Cold-water fish, such as sardines, herring, and salmon, are good sources of omega-3 fatty acids. If you buy canned fish, choose it in spring water, not soybean oil, which has enough omega-6 in it to drown out the benefits of the omega-3 in the fish. Some health critics caution that sea-caught cold-water fish carry high levels of industrial toxins in their fatty tissue. Farm-raised fish are safer, but they often have lower levels of fatty acids, so it's a trade-off. Many people prefer to forego fish oils altogether in favor of flaxseed oil instead. Omega-3 from the land. Flaxseed oil. Flaxseed oil is one of the world's best sources of omega-3 fatty acids. It has a slightly nutty flavor that makes great salad dressing, especially when it's mixed with your favorite vinegar. Because flaxseed oil is extraordinarily sensitive to light and heat, it comes in a small black opaque bottle with its pressing date and expiration date clearly printed on the label. You can find flaxseed oil in the refrigerated section of a health food or natural grocery store. Two of the best brands are Spectrum and Barlean's, which also manufacture omega-3-rich Norwegian fish oil capsules. Be sure to store these oils in your refrigerator at home, or they will spoil, and discard them after they have expired. To increase your omega-3 fatty acid intake, have a serving of fish or fish oil capsules, or a tablespoon of flaxseed oil at least 3 days a week. Avoid junk oils. No matter what type of oil you buy, avoid the ones in jumbo, clear plastic bottles sitting on the grocery store shelves. They're full of oil that's been torched within an inch of its life and has little nutritional content remaining. Oil manufacturers want products that never expire so they can sit in warehouses and stores for weeks or months before they're sold, and then they can sit in your kitchen for as long as you'd like. They never go bad. But we should know by now that food that never goes bad isn't food anymore. It's just an industrial invention masquerading as food. Companies create these non-spoiling oils by blasting them with heat and light, which alters their chemical makeup dramatically. This is especially true of polyunsaturated oils, such as safflower, corn, and soybean oil, which do not tolerate heat or light very well in their natural state. I call them junk oils. They're like liquid junk food in a bottle. Choose good quality oils. What is a good quality oil, and how do you know it when you see it? A good quality oil is one that hasn't been processed out of its natural state so that it's still rich in nutrients and not chemically altered. Knowing it when you see it can be tricky. Oils that say coal-processed or expeller-pressed, processing methods that avoid heat, are better bets, as are oils with some natural color or with expiration dates. But it's sometimes hard to tell what's been heavily processed and what hasn't, regardless of what the label claims. Your best bet is to shop for oils at a health food store or natural grocery that carries high-quality brands with good reputations in the natural health community. Avoid partially hydrogenated oils. An even more insidious problem than heavily processed oil is partially hydrogenated oil. These are the oils used in most packaged foods. Not only are they rich in omega-6 fatty acids, but they've been chemically altered into little Frankenstein monsters. Partially hydrogenated vegetable oil is created by adding hydrogen to a vegetable oil molecule. This chemical alteration allows the vegetable oil to remain solid at room temperature, like margarine or shortening, which are the Adam and Eve of hydrogenated products. These altered oils can then be substituted for solid saturated oils, such as butter, which is why they're used in lots of low-fat foods. Hydrogenation was a great invention, it seemed. It allowed the packaged food industry to boom, and it seemed totally healthy and safe. But it's not. The problem is that partially hydrogenated oil is not a substance that occurs in nature. It's totally artificial. When partially hydrogenated oil is digested and metabolized in your body, it produces waste products like all other nutrients do. But these waste products are deformed, so the body doesn't know what to do with them. They don't have the normal chemical signs on them that say, "I'm a waste product, throw me out." And they don't have the normal handles that the cleanup cells use to haul them away. Parentheses, you can almost hear the cell cleanup crew at morning coffee break. "Hey, Bob, I saw some of those strange blobs out there again, but I don't have any orders to pick them up, so I left them there." End parentheses. So these weird waste products sit there, accumulating like hair in the bathtub drain or steel ball bearings in the garbage disposal, clogging up the system. After a while, if there are enough of them, they damage the tissue around them by making it impossible for that tissue to clear away its own waste or to get enough oxygen. Sounds familiar, doesn't it? And there's no way to get rid of these blobs. The answer is to avoid eating them in the first place. Choosing the right oils. 1. Shop for oils at your health food or natural grocery store. Choose expeller-pressed or cold-pressed brands. 2. Take a tablespoon of flaxseed oil or a serving of fish or fish oil capsules at least 3 times a week. 3. Use olive oil or canola oil for cooking. 4. Use oleic-rich monounsaturated vegetable oils for baking. 5. Avoid packaged foods made with vegetable oil, especially partially hydrogenated vegetable oil. 6. Don't use margarine or vegetable shortening. The fifth star, take a balanced dose of vitamins and minerals. In 2001, the NEI announced the results of its groundbreaking 10-year study of vitamins and macular degeneration, the AREDS, parentheses, age-related eye disease study. In parentheses. More than 3,700 people participated from around the country under the direction of the NEI's Division of Epidemiology and Clinical Research. This study proved beyond a doubt that vitamins work if you already have macular degeneration. In fact, they work so well that they can now be considered a treatment along with laser treatment. The AREDS showed that people with moderate or advanced AMD who took beta-carotene, vitamin C, vitamin E, zinc, and copper in the doses listed in the box, had a 25% lower risk of their macular degeneration progressing than those who took none of these. The AREDS was launched in 1992, before lutein and zeaxanthin were thought to be important nutrients for our eyes, so they are not included in the study, nor was selenium. It is possible that with these additional supplements, the success reported by the AREDS would have been even greater. If you already have full-blown macular degeneration, it's essential to start taking a good quality multivitamin and mineral supplement. If you are at a high risk for macular degeneration, or if you have early signs of it, supplements may help prevent its development or retard its progression, although this hasn't yet been definitely proven. Nevertheless, why wait? Now's a good time to choose a multivitamin and take it regularly. Listed below, recommended vitamins and minerals and their doses. Beta-carotene, 25,000 IU, parentheses, not if you smoke. Vitamin C, 500 milligrams. Vitamin E, 400 IUs. Zinc, 60 to 80 milligrams. Copper, 2 milligrams, lutein, 10 milligrams, parentheses, take at a different time from beta-carotene. Selenium, 200 to 250 mcgs. Choose good quality supplements. Although taking any vitamin or mineral supplement is likely to be better than taking none at all, there are good reasons for choosing natural vitamins that are cold processed and that use vegetable coatings rather than food varnish coatings. Cold processed means that the nutrients and the vitamins have not been subjected to high levels of heat during manufacturing, which minimizes their effectiveness. Vegetable coatings are easier on your digestive system and do not contain as many artificial ingredients as varnish coatings. However, most vitamin labels don't give you information on their coatings or processing methods. In fact, since the FDA does not regulate vitamins or minerals, none of the claims on their labels are actually monitored or verified. Different brands also use different quality ingredients, as well as different coatings and production processes, which is one reason why prices vary so greatly. Parentheses, although the most expensive is not necessarily the best, in parentheses. So what should you do? Start by narrowing your choice to brands sold at health food specialty stores or natural grocery stores, or by asking your doctor or naturopath. Many physicians are not familiar with various brands or do not realize how much they vary in quality, but your doctor may know. In fact, some of the best brands are now sold through physicians' offices. You can also consult an independent evaluator, such as Consumer Reports, parentheses, www.consumerreports.org, or consumerlab.com. In addition to the nutrients and doses listed in the box, consider choosing supplements that include any or all of the following: zeaxanthin, grape seed extract, ginkgo biloba, bilberry, taurine, N-acetylcysteine, and glutathione. On many vitamin packages, vitamin A is included in beta-carotene, since some beta-carotene becomes vitamin A in the body. Lutein may also be listed as part of the beta-carotene complex. Avoid excessive doses. Vitamins and minerals do not work alone in our bodies, and neither can any other kind of nutrient. They always need the whole team of players found in a wide variety of fruits and vegetables. Just taking vitamins C and E, or a lutein pill, or adding spinach to a diet of coffee, steak, chips, and ice cream is like asking Phil Rizzuto to field hits from an entire lineup of free radicals and win the game all by himself. He may be a fabulous player, but he will lose every time. You need the whole complement of nutrients that your body was designed to use, and you need them all in balanced amounts. For this reason, no one should take excessive doses of any vitamin or mineral. As a rule of thumb, supplements that provide anywhere from the RDA, parentheses, recommended daily allowance, in parentheses, to 2 or 3 times the RDA are best. You may take more of vitamin C or E, since their RDAs are often considered very low and moderately higher amounts of these vitamins are not considered hazardous. The RDA for each vitamin is listed on the bottle, along with the percentage of the RDA that each dose provides. If you smoke, avoid high doses of beta-carotene. Drink plenty of water, too. Your body needs water to survive. It's our very first nutrient. Drinking 6 to 8 glasses of water a day will go a long way in helping your body utilize the vitamins that you've taken to repair its tissue. The best foundation: a fresh, varied diet. We look good and we live a long time, but we don't really eat well. Just taking vitamins with a diet of steak, potatoes, and coffee, or just taking vitamins with a diet of salad, croutons, and Diet Coke, isn't a recipe for good health. We habitually eat pretty narrow diets, the same vegetables or the same frozen dinners year in and year out. We aren't getting the wide range of nutrients we need in our foods to keep our bodies essentially robust. Indigestion, heartburn, allergies, constipation, irritable bowel syndrome, hemorrhoids, high blood pressure, heart disease, some forms of diabetes, some cancers, and very likely macular degeneration are all completely or partially diet-related conditions. It probably isn't an accident that these are our primary health problems today, and we experience them at near epidemic levels. In 1990, the second National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey revealed that fewer than 10% of Americans consume 5 servings of fruits and vegetables a day, which is now the recommended amount. 50% consumed no garden vegetable, 70% no fruit or vegetable rich in vitamin C, and 80% consumed no fruit or vegetable rich in antioxidants that neutralize the free radicals implicated in many cancers and macular degeneration. Few of us are getting the RDA of key vitamins and nutrients in our diets, and the RDA is not the optimal amount, but the minimum amount necessary to avoid diseases or conditions caused by deficient diets. In other words, most of us walk around chronically malnourished despite appearances. Vitamins are effective and often necessary supplements, but they are no substitute for a good foundation, a fresh, varied diet rich in vegetables and fruits. How we wind up eating poorly. While we don't set out trying to avoid nutritious foods, it's incredibly easy to do so. First, we often live fast-paced lives that allow a limited time to choose food and prepare it. With less time, it's harder to be creative. We tend to rely on the same old familiar meals. We also tend to rely on snack foods or packaged food, which do not provide adequate nutrition or variety. Second, we don't really understand the importance of fresh fruits and vegetables. We usually think of fruit as something we add to pies or cereal. We think of vegetables as side dishes to meat, poultry, or fish. But fruits and vegetables should be our main dishes, while meat, poultry, fish, and starches should be our side dishes. This takes some rethinking of what breakfast, lunch, and dinner should look like. Third, we don't realize how varied in fruits and vegetables our diets need to be. We often rely on a handful of favorite vegetables that we eat frequently, avoiding all the others or eating them rarely. When I sat down and assessed my own diet a few years ago, I discovered that I regularly ate peas, broccoli, and spinach salads, but that was virtually it for vegetables or fruit. My diet would have been okay if every vegetable contained every nutrient we need. Eating would then be a matter of quantity rather than variety, but this isn't the case. Ironically, our vitamin-poor diets may be the result of the great availability of food in the United States. With refrigeration, worldwide shipping, hothouses, and industrialized farms, we can eat almost anything in any season. If spinach and red peppers were only available 2 months out of the year, we would be excited by their arrival. They might even be our only vegetable options during those 2 months, and we would eat them in greater quantities. But when vegetables and fruits are available year-round, they lose their seasonal appeal, and we tend to overlook them, choosing only our favorites month after month. Medicine has contributed to our poor eating patterns by focusing on pharmaceutical and technological solutions to our health problems while overlooking nutrition. We've been running our cars on poor gray gasoline and oil, and then paying the mechanics to fix the problem. And the mechanics haven't been telling us to take care of our cars, at least not as much as they should. I count myself among those mechanics. I only started to talk seriously to my patients about nutrition a few years ago. But nutrition is clearly one of the most important things I can talk about, even when it comes to macular degeneration. Eating well. Outlining an optimal diet would take more room than we have in this book, but I encourage you to use other sources to help you create your own. There are many nutrition plans on the market. I recommend using one that emphasizes eating plenty of fruits and vegetables and the right oils and minimizes chemicals and additives in your diet. My favorite plan is Andrew Weil, W-E-I-L, MD's, popular 8 Weeks to Optimal Healing Power, which provides easy-to-follow guidelines. His book is available in print and audio tape. At the very least, get the Big 7. If you decide not to follow a nutrition program or plan, you should at least make sure you are regularly eating foods that give you a natural source of the Big 7: beta-carotene, lutein, vitamins C and E, selenium, zinc, and copper. To help you add these foods to your diet, here's a partial list of sources for these nutrients. Nutrient sources: beta-carotene, red peppers, carrots, avocados, asparagus, squash, sweet potatoes, nectarines, apricots, cantaloupe, mango, papaya, watermelon, kiwi, and dark green leafy vegetables. Lutein: kale, collard greens, mustard greens, spinach, parsley, Swiss chard, and romaine lettuce. Vitamin C: red and green peppers, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, turnips, cabbage, citrus fruits, cantaloupe, kiwi, and dark green leafy vegetables. Vitamin E: seeds, nuts, and whole grains. Selenium: wheat germ, oats and bran, fish, egg yolks, chicken, garlic, and red Swiss chard. Zinc: oysters and fish, pumpkin seeds, ginger root, pecans, and Brazil nuts. Copper: Brazil nuts, almonds, hazelnuts, walnuts, pecans. Healing fruits: wolfberry, gaogizi, G-O-U-Q-I-Z-I, China's berry for your eyes. While you may be familiar with lutein, you probably haven't heard much about zeaxanthin and have heard nothing at all about wolfberry, Lycum barbarum. Lutein is a key antioxidant for your eyes. It occurs in high concentration in the rod cells of your retina, which are largely responsible for your peripheral vision. But the cone cells of your macula, which allow for detailed central vision, have high concentrations of zeaxanthin. Lutein and zeaxanthin are sister pigments. They protect your retina by neutralizing the free radicals from sunlight that may damage eye tissue. There are very few foods rich in zeaxanthin. Wolfberry is one of them. Wolfberry is a sweet, mild fruit that the Chinese have used to ensure healthy eyes for nearly 2,000 years. Mark O.M. Zhao, M.D., D.S.C., of the Wilmer Institute of Johns Hopkins University, calls it the Chinese chicken soup for the eye. Sure enough, Dr. Zhao discovered that rats that eat these berries, which they love, do not suffer damage to their maculas when they are exposed to strong light, a strong sign of the preservative powers of zeaxanthin. Dr. Zhao has launched a clinical study to discover whether wolfberry will also protect the maculas of humans, in hopes of developing a much-needed treatment for dry macular degeneration. Wolfberry may also have beneficial effects on the liver and immune system. Dried wolfberries are small and sweet like raisins. You can stew them with meats, parentheses, add wolfberries 10 minutes before the meat is done, or steam them with chicken or fish. You can also add them to nut or dried fruit mixes, sprinkle them on cereal, add them to bread, muffin, or pudding recipes, boil them to make tea, or enjoy a few tablespoons as a mid-afternoon treat. To find them, ask a Chinese grocery or certified Chinese medicine practitioner for gaogizi, or contact a Chinese foods and herbs import company such as Rich Nature, parentheses, www.richnature.com. Phone 425-774-2266, in parentheses. Bilberry, the RAF pilot's secret weapon. During World War II, a group of Royal Air Force, parentheses, RAF pilots demonstrated almost supernatural night vision by downing shadowy Luftwaffe fighters during pitch-black raids with devastating accuracy. Legend has it that the secret to their success was bilberry jam. Bilberry, a British cousin of the huckleberry, is said to enhance night vision, and because of its deep pigment and bioflavonoid qualities, may help repair eye conditions associated with cell damage, such as cataracts and macular degeneration. But limited studies conducted in the last 10 years have not confirmed these claims. It turns out that, rather than berries, the pilot's secret may actually have been radar, which the British developed in the middle of the war. Not wanting the Axis powers to discover its use, the RAF put out the word that the pilot's diet was enhancing their eyesight. Does this mean that bilberry is a dud? Not necessarily. It may have strong medicinal powers, but we just don't have the proof. If you'd like to try bilberries, look for bilberry jam at your local specialty food store or natural grocery store and spread it on your toast in the morning. Nani juice, the Polynesian tonic. For thousands of years, the people of the Polynesian islands have used the juice of the nani, N-O-N-I, fruit as a skin salve, antioxidant, and immune system enhancer. While there is no scientific proof of nani juice's healing powers, you can find it in your local health food store, and some physicians suggest it for their patients. Nani juice has never been studied in relationship to AMD, although I have seen one anecdotal account of its beneficial effects by a woman with Stargardt's, the juvenile form of macular degeneration. If you would like to try nani juice, you can find it at your local natural grocery or health food store. Of all the healing fruits associated with your eyes, though, I believe wolfberry will turn out to be the most important. Healing practices. Some folks put microstimulation and rheotherapy in this category, but we talk about them in Chapter 2 instead. Anytime you apply electrodes to your eyes or running your blood through a machine, I don't think it can really be called a natural treatment. But there are many other practices people are using to heal their bodies that are holistic. Meditation, yoga, tai chi, acupuncture, acupressure, massage, saunas and steam baths, and exercise. Are they effective for macular degeneration? Honestly, we don't know. There hasn't been a formal study on any of these practices as a treatment for AMD. However, there have been plenty of studies confirming their beneficial effects for the body as a whole. This is particularly true of meditation and yoga. There is no reason to believe that a healthy body wouldn't contribute to healthy eyes and to a healthy spirit as well. Yoga and meditation. I love yoga. Yoga is essentially a meditation practice that centers your mind through specific body movements. Some forms of yoga, such as power and Ashtanga yoga, are extremely athletic and not relaxing at all, unless you are made of rubber, but others are very healing for both the mind and the body. Iyengar yoga, for example, is particularly good if you are stiff or have previous injuries. Many yoga teachers will combine movements from different schools of yoga to offer the best approach for their students. If you are in any doubt, call and ask to speak to the instructor ahead of time. He or she should be able to recommend the best class for you and tell you what to expect and what to wear. If you have low vision, tell your instructor so that he or she can give clear verbal directions. The best instructors will listen carefully to your concerns and allow voluntary rest time during class so that you can follow the movements at your own pace. Meditation alone has many of the same benefits as yoga. It can lower your blood pressure, reduce your stress, enhance your sleep, and support your body's natural healing process. Just as there are many forms of yoga, there are also many forms of meditation. One of the most popular is mindfulness meditation, which focuses on simply becoming completely aware of the thoughts in your mind, without any judgment. It's very hard to learn on your own. For this reason, it's often best to learn meditation in a class, even though it's essentially a solitary practice. Many people who have meditated for years regularly do so in advanced classes or meditation workshops for company and encouragement. Meditation and prayer have much in common. If you are religious, consider committing to a regular practice of prayer in your life. This too can be a powerful healer. One note of caution. If you are experiencing depression, avoid meditation. As someone once put it, when you're depressed, your mind is like a bad neighborhood. You don't want to go there alone. You need to move your body instead. Aerobic exercise and yoga are good antidotes for depression. See Chapter 6. The Bates Method. William H. Bates first publicized his method of treating poor eyesight with eye muscle exercises in 1920, and it's been very controversial ever since. It's also inspired many similar approaches, such as iRobotics, Visionetics, and the See Clearly method, although none so famous. The Bates method includes various activities like shifting one's gaze between focal points, swinging the neck and head, juggling balls, and allowing sunshine to warm the whites of one's eye through closed lids, which are designed to stimulate circulation in the eyes or to retrain the eye muscles. Despite its perennial popularity, though, there is no medically accepted evidence that the Bates method or any similar program actually works. I have read a handful of anecdotal accounts by people with macular degeneration who say that the Bates method has helped them see better or read a line lower on the eye chart. What happens to a few folks who try the Bates method or another version may be similar to what happens to everyone in visual rehabilitation. They learn to use the vision they have more effectively. As for the theory that better circulation to the retina would help with AMD, that's probably true, but it's unclear that the Bates method would guarantee better circulation. Since our eye muscles are not connected to our maculas, they do not share the same blood vessels. Moving these muscles alone won't help. It takes moving the head, neck, shoulders, torso, and perhaps the whole body, as we do when we exercise or take yoga, to really get our blood moving. This is the end of Side 3A, continuing on Side 3B. Regarding Chapter 4, New Gourmet Greens, Recipes for Your Eyes.